Hey everyone, I just want to throw this in here real quick before the episode gets started. Chase and I decided to change the name officially to Shoulder. So that's how you'll find it, if you're searching on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher. And if there are any other mediums you want us to throw this podcast on, just let us know. We'll get it up there as soon as possible. But other than that, Shoulder is the official name now. Thinking maybe we might want to start doing some sort of a mailbag thing going forward. So that'd be of interest to you, just let us know and we'll get an email set up and everything for that. But otherwise, hope you enjoy the episode.
The 26th head football coach of this great institution. Ladies and gentlemen, our new head football coach, Mel Tucker.
Our team, we will be physical.
Wilkins again gives to Benjamin, hit and dropped in the backfield. Mustafa Johnson shooting through for Colorado.
Sometimes you just know. And I know that the young men in that room, they're hungry.
An interception thrown by Martinez. It's picked off by guess who? Nate Landman.
I've never been in a game as a player or a coach that we weren't expected to win.
Blitz from Nebraska. Montez takes a shot, drops it in to Chanel. Touchdown!
Welcome back to episode 2 of Shoulder to Shoulder. So before we get into it, obviously we're going to be going over kind of what we think about the Rocky Mountain Showdown, a couple of stuff we saw from the Week 0 games. But first, we got a couple of announcements and amendments from last week. Obviously, for those of you that watched, it was Arizona playing Hawaii, not Arizona State. I was mentioning Arizona State and how we'd be excited to see Jaden Daniels in action, but obviously that is not who was playing. And the other thing I wanted to mention was I wanted to give a special shout-out to my roommate, Max Levy. I kind of snapped at him last week. As I was trying to upload, this is my first upload of a podcast, so I snapped at him when I was having difficulties getting it uploaded. So, Max, apologies for that, but I think we made amends there. And other than that, Chase and I would love it if you guys could follow us on Twitter. So, just wanted to throw our Twitter handles out there. Mine is at Brett Magana, BrettMagana, and Chase.
And mine is at Chase V Anderson, AnderSen, is how you spell that at the end. I've only got like 10 followers because I just turned my Twitter back on, but I'll start tweeting and stuff like that now that we've got this going during the season. So there'll be a little bit more content there.
Perfect. And then the naming, Chase.
Oh yeah, and then shout out to my fiance Michaela Enger for the new podcast name. We were really struggling to figure out what to call this thing, and she threw out Shoulder to Shoulder, and we've kind of run with it. So,
yeah, I think it's probably the best name we had so far out of all the ones we come up with. I think Buff Stuff was definitely the lowest rating that we had. So, I think it's a pretty good name overall. So I think we just wanted to get into it this week by going over kind of a brief overview of the AP Top 25, which I don't know about you, but I think the preseason poll is just the dumbest thing ever. It just gives confirmation bias as you're going through the season, and also gives undue bias as teams start to lose. So anything you wanted to kind of touch on in the Top 25 that we saw come out a couple days ago?
I noticed, okay, so like Pac-12, they've got 5 teams in there. CU is going to end up playing 6 teams that are preseason AP top 25, which, like you said, it doesn't really matter. Like, all of this could be totally different anyway. So it's not a big deal, but Pac-12 doesn't have any in the top 10. Oregon's the highest at 11, and Washington and Utah are both close at 13 and 14. So I thought that was important to note. I think of all the Pac-12 teams that are in there, probably Utah and Oregon, I would say, are the most likely to like stay in there or even move up. Utah especially, because the South, I think, is in general easier division. So if they can get through whatever tough games they have, they should have a pretty easy go of it through the conference. Stanford barely squeaked in there. I would be pretty surprised if when the season was over, they were in the top 25.
I would too. I think that was more of like a David Shaw confidence vote than anything that got them in there. And maybe Kellen, or KJ Costello, not Kellen Moore. So, you pretty much nailed everything on the head that I was thinking. I think if Jacob Eason at Washington can be the five-star recruit quarterback that he was initially, I think that Washington has the talent. I mean, they just kind of are at that stage in the program with Chris Peterson where they're just reloading. Mm-hmm. So they don't really have any – I mean, they lost a ton from the secondary last week, but or last year, but I don't think that they're going to have any problems coming back from that. So I think they'll be good as well. So I think them, Utah, and Oregon, like we said, are all going to be, you know, top 25, probably top 15 by season end. And then the other thing I wanted to touch on, obviously a little bit of bias coming in on my end because I'm a CU fan, but I find it a little funny that if you look all the way down at 24, you see Nebraska, and it's great because the list I looked at had all the previous season records listed right next to their name.
How perfect is that?
It's, you know, 15-0, 14-11, 12-10, 9, 8 wins is the lowest, except for you get down to 24 and you see 4-8 there. And, you know, I mean, Scott Frost did some great things at UCF, but I don't think that being in the Big Ten West is the same as being a Group of Five team. So that was the only one that kind of bothered me, but again, I think that's just kind of my CU bias coming into play.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I'm glad that they're ranked because I definitely don't think they're that good, but, you know, any opportunity the Buffs have to get a win against a ranked team is pretty cool. So I'm glad that they do that, and their first game is like a completely nothing game against a nothing team. So we really won't know what they actually look like until they come to Boulder, so...
Yeah, you know that the red sunshine's going to be pumping, though, when Adrian Martinez throws for 350, 400 yards against a terrible team.
When he puts up, like, ridiculous numbers against some team that can barely even field a full lineup or something like that,
Yeah, he'll probably be, you know, the number one overall receiving votes in Heisman from the Huskers' point of view. So we'll be going against the eventual Heisman candidate coming up in week two against Boulder. So that'll be an interesting game.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Never mind that he, you know, has to actually play real teams for the rest of the year, but who cares?
It's the Nebraska special starting off with a week one cupcake, but.
Also, I feel like whenever anyone has talked about Nebraska, they're like, yeah, Adrian Martinez, Scott Frost, that offense is going to be great. Oh, yeah, the defense. Well, they suck, but you know what? They'll figure it out. It's fine.
Yeah. I think everyone just thinks that they can just win shootouts left and right, but I don't think that that's a recipe for success in any league, unless you're Oklahoma with Lincoln Murray or Lincoln Riley. That's about the only team that can consistently win 10, 11 games while having a non-existent defense.
I mean, that's every game in the Big 12, so.
That's a good point.
Yeah, okay. I think that's it for the AP Top 25. Again, it really doesn't matter the preseason poll because it's all kind of guessing anyway, but I did think there were some funny things about it.
It's always interesting every year just to see kind of what the media thinks, and it'll all change after this week, especially, you know, with these week zero games that we just had, which we're kind of going to get into now. Florida-Miami was the first one that came on the docket, and... I'm going to let Chase kind of run through most of these two games here because I was at a wedding this past weekend with my girlfriend, so I did not have a chance to even watch these games. I did watch highlights, and I did see the last, like, 5 minutes of Arizona-Hawaii, which is about all I needed to see. And with Florida-Miami, I mean, from what I saw in highlights and what I've heard on the chatter, it was just an ugly, ugly football game.
I was going to say, you missed some seriously – there are some – pretty choice words you could use to describe the two games for week zero, and let me just tell you, none of them are good. So first one, Florida versus Miami. Just a couple of notes from the game, just an example of what we were looking at. Florida, a top 10 team, by the way, in the preseason AP poll, had 4 turnovers. Their starting quarterback had 1 fumble and 2 picks to go along with 3 touchdowns, but 1 fumble and 2 picks, and then some of the picks were, like, just completely inexcusable. Oh, my God, I couldn't even believe it. Plays. It kind of reminded me of, what was it, last year when Virginia Tech and Florida State played in their first game, and they were both AP ranked, and we watched that game, and we were like, these teams both suck, but Virginia Tech just didn't play anyone for weeks, so they coasted.
Yeah, I remember texting about that game last year, and I just remember I was like, I think we really got into it after the polls came out the following week, and they were both
right up there.
We were both like, did no one else watch this game? It was complete garbage. But and I think that's the same thing's going to happen here for Florida.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly what it reminded me of. Is Florida probably won, so I don't think they're going to really drop too much or anything like that. But yeah. And Miami, for the record, really didn't. They didn't look. Didn't look much better. So it was an ugly game. I don't think either of the teams are very good in reality unless Florida really turns it around. I mean, there were a lot of stats like for the defenses that looked really good, but I'm not sure if that was because the offenses just really struggled or if the defense was actually good.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Florida had like 10 sacks or something mm-hmm. like that. So
it was bad.
Good numbers, but again, who knows if that's legit or not. We'll see in the coming weeks, but eye test did not look very good that game.
Yeah, I think from what, like I said, I only saw like some highlights and stuff, but Felipe Franks, I mean, the dude was just in the cameras, like he was just talking smack all game. He punted the ball into the crowd after the game. Like, for how poorly of a showing he had, he's a very cocky dude.
Yeah, to say the least. He was not good. I mean, it was pretty ugly, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess be happy that you got the win, but...
Right. God. Yeah. I mean, and then on Miami's side, I think, I mean, at least for Manny Diaz, I think he can be happy. Manny Diaz, the head coach, I think he'd be happy with what Jaren Williams did at quarterback. I mean,
sure, they had, yeah.
I don't think anyone was really confident what was going to happen there. And then Jaren Williams, I mean, he played all right for being a freshman, you know, against a top 10 team, which I don't think they're eventually going to be a top 10 team. But, he did all right. I think that's got to be something to look forward to, at least going forward.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. And then the next game was Arizona and Hawaii. And this one I was really interested to see specifically because I want to see what Khalil Tate would do when he's not injured and how Kevin Sumlin would look in year two as the head coach of Arizona. And they did not get off to a good start for the 2019 football season.
No, they definitely didn't. I mean, look, this game, okay, Khalil Tate, 361 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, 108 yards rushing, and they lost. So if that tells you anything, I mean, he went off in this game.
Yeah.
And granted, Hawaii's defense looked absolutely atrocious. So
mm-hmm.
That definitely, I don't think we'll really know if their offense is actually that good. For example, I mean, Hawaii, the Hawaii drives in this game, 13 drives, 6 of them were turnovers, 6 of them ended in touchdowns, and they had one punt. So Arizona got 6 extra possessions in this game, and they still lost.
Yep. And I think didn't call me, because when I finally got back to the Airbnb and I turned on the game, Cole McDonald, who was like an all-star last year for Hawaii, he got benched, and I'm assuming it's because he threw those 4 picks.
Yeah, 4 picks, and 2 fumbles. It was ugly for them, but they still, I mean, they pulled out the win by a touchdown. Khalil Tate mm-hmm. got tackled at the 1 yard line trying to tie the game. He was right
yep.
there.
That was the perfect like Heisman highlight moment, and he just couldn't pull it off.
Oh yeah, exactly. It would have been if he had scored and they had won that game, it would have been all about how, oh, Khalil Tate has, you know, crazy game with 400 total yards and all this stuff. But now it's just mm-hmm. about how their defense couldn't stop anybody. I mean, Cedric Bird, a receiver for Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
had 224 yards and 4 touchdowns on that Arizona defense, mm-hmm. which just led me to think, like, okay, well, what is LaVisca Chenault going to be able to do?
Right, that's exactly how
LaVisca.
Is he going to go
for 305 touchdowns, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Like, you got to be kidding me. It was ugly.
Yeah, and I think the fact that they did turn it over, Hawaii turned it over 6 times, and Arizona still managed to lose that game, scoring 38 points, is, I mean, it's obviously the players are the ones out there making plays, but that's, at some point, that's just a huge indictment on the coaching staff.
Yeah, it was not a good way to start. I know going to Hawaii, it creates some weird games. I mean, the Buffs. We watched them a couple of years ago lose a game in Hawaii.
Yep.
Like it's an odd game, a week zero game going to Hawaii. Yeah, it seems to do bad things to teams, but I still think overall Arizona pretty much showed me I think what we expected. I mean, we touched on it last week a little that we just didn't think that they were going to improve that much. I mean, it didn't, it didn't seem like they were going to do that much different, and it really did look like pretty much the same team. Khalil Tate putting up a bunch of numbers. He did also have two picks. I forgot to include that in his in his stats. But he put up a bunch of numbers, and they still lost because their defense just couldn't stop anybody. So
Yeah, I mean, really, the main takeaway for me here was just seeing what I saw the last 5 minutes and seeing the stats at the end of the game. I think every other Pac-12 offensive coordinator watched this game, and they were just licking their chops thinking, I know exactly how we're going to attack this Arizona team. And it's just, it's simple. It's just, you just got to pass the ball because their defensive secondary is just absolutely terrible. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona's defense this year breaks some school records and not the kind of records you want to be breaking.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we get some kind of ridiculous performance from our receivers and Montez come that Arizona game. Pretty excited to watch that one now, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm real excited to see that one. I mean, that's a game when Hawaii's putting up those kind of numbers, I think the talent that CU has on offense, I mean, they could really put up some points.
Yeah, so ready for that one for sure.
Yeah, well, so enough about the week zero games. We'll get into what the meat of this, as Mel Tucker likes to say, the meat and potatoes of the podcast is. we'll get into the Buffs versus the Lambs. Or Rams, excuse me. So, I mean, you know, just the goats. Just right off the bat, I mean, I think we both did some research on CSU, what they've got returning, what their depth chart looks like. Not surprisingly, I don't think that they're going to have a very good season. Just off of S&P statistics, their returning offensive production, they have the 126th ranked in the FBS returning production. So only four teams have worse returning numbers than them on offense. And then on defense, they're 96th. So they have very little returning in terms of actual production. And that's from a 3-9 football team.
Yeah. So, I mean, CSU, it's going to be a struggle for them this year, I think. Mm-hmm. I would be shocked if this game isn't a blowout. I mean, so yeah, last year CSU went 3-9. This game last year was a 45-13 Buffs victory. So
yep.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was something similar this year.
It also could have been about 60-13. Oh,
it could have been way worse. Yeah.
But you know he took the foot off the gas like he did in all the other games. so I mean, shout out Mac. They don't return much. They Olabisi Johnson and Preston Williams, both their top receivers from last year, are gone. Colin Hill's obviously back, and there's a lot of like talk out of the CSU camp that, you know, he's a potential like NFL guy. And I know they like to blow smoke up their you know what's, but I mean, like, just looking at last year's stats, obviously he didn't start the entire season. I think he started like the last four games, but you know, he came in last four games, I think he completed somewhere around 61% for 1,099 yards passing, and he threw 5 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. I mean, those are not the kind of numbers you look at and say, yep, NFL quarterback right there.
Yeah, I don't know where it's coming from. Supposedly, he's looked very good in camp. So, you know, that's great for them. He's looked good in camp against CSU defense. So
yep.
Get ready.
Which is nothing special.
get ready. Yeah. So Colin Hill, I think he's going to be an interesting one. Like I think we both feel, I'm not very scared of him personally. Mm-hmm. I know the receivers, they have had a 1,000-yard receiver for 5 straight years. So they do have a habit of having some guy stepping up every year. They've got a couple of guys in the NFL, you know. Looks like the big candidates this year are Warren Jackson and Nate Craig Myers. But I haven't heard, I don't know if you've heard, he's the Auburn transfer that came over last year, but they weren't sure if he was going to be able to play for the first 3 games this year.
Yeah, so I mean, I looked into that as much as I could, and it seems like they're being pretty quiet about it, which I don't blame them.
Right,
you know,
right.
When you got to kind of pull out all the stops you can in that first week game. It sounds like people inside the AD over there think that he'll be able to suit up week one, even though he didn't come until like week four or five last year.
Right.
I mean, he's a former four star. So he obviously had something to show for it back in high school. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what he can do when he's in an offense that he can definitely be the focal point. But other than him, I mean, they do have Preston Williams. They do have, Warren Jackson. He's 6 foot six, like 220 pounds. I mean, I think if he can cause issues against our secondary, then we're going to be in for a long defensive year just because, he is a big guy, but he's also, you know, he's not like some like world beater. So I'll be curious to see how he does in this game against our pretty green defensive seven in the back. But I mean, I guess I'm assuming we'll probably put Derek Abrams on him all game and kind of let him just do his thing. But other than that, I mean, they don't really have too much, it looks like, coming back from receiving standpoint either.
No, I mean, they're definitely looking for one of these guys to step up like they've had in the past, but you know, who knows if that's actually going to happen for him. I wrote down just overall like a couple of pluses for the Rams, as much as mm-hmm. it made me sick to do so. So we talked about 1,000-yard receiver, Colin Hill obviously getting positive reviews. I saw mm-hmm. their D-line. I mean, they got Jalen Bates from ASU. Mm-hmm. They do actually have, as far as numbers of people coming back, not in terms of production, but numbers of people, they got back a good chunk of their defense.
Yep.
So, you know, that could be good for them. And then the last thing I had that was a plus is Ryan Stonehouse is their punter, and mm-hmm. he's very good, and he has an A++ football name. So
I had him written down as a plus for them too, just because I mean he's a solid punter. But
and let me be honest, the dude's gonna get some work in this year, so he better be good. They better hope they have a good punter.
Yeah, he's probably going to be their MVP by season's end, which isn't a great thing, but
yeah, probably not.
Yeah, and then I mean, the thing I think that surprises me the most about this year's, specifically this year's CSU football team, I mean, like you said, they've had five straight years of 1,000-yard receivers, but they've always kind of had a very solid offensive line and a very solid running back, and until, you know, we see something differently. Marcus McElroy is their leading returning running back. He ran 52 times for 219 yards last year.
Yeah.
Nothing crazy. And so, I mean, I think, you know, they're going to be in a lot of pain if they can't get a running game going, because I just don't think they have the star talent wide receiver. I don't think Colin Hill is a guy that can completely take over a game. And so, I mean, if they can't get a consistent running game going, I think they're going to just struggle throughout the season just like they did last year.
Yeah, agreed. I think, yeah, the offensive line, as far as the negatives for the Rams, I think the offensive line, it's going to be pretty rough. I mean, they were bad mm-hmm. last year. They've only got two returning starters. So
right.
Chances are they're probably going to struggle again. And, you know, I said earlier their defense, they did have a lot of bodies coming back. But, you know, it was terrible last year. So even if they do have people returning, I don't feel like that's a huge bonus. I do. I feel like, obviously, there's a pretty big talent gap here, and mm-hmm. it should show up on game.
Yeah. And, yeah, I think it's kind of like the perfect opening game for Mel Tucker and his staff to kind of get going with, because there is such a huge talent gap. I think that, you know, scheme, obviously, I think that these coaches are better than the CSU coaches. I just don't think Mike Bobo's kind of going to take that step there. I think that they're going to be out-schemed and out-talented. So I think it's a good game to start with, because you can make those mistakes that you can't make in week 2 against Nebraska or in week 4 against Arizona State. You'll kind of be able to get those out of the way against a team that just doesn't have the talent to match up.
Agreed. Yeah, it's a good game to start off with, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, so, I mean, I think, you know, for the CUs, I think we both know a little bit more about the Buffs. I think some guys to look out for, obviously, We're ignoring the extremely obvious Laviska Shenault, Steven Montez, Nate Lamb, and Mustafa Johnson. Some guys I really want to see kind of just pop on screen. Well, on screen if you're at home, on the field if you're at the game. Dimitri Stanley and Aaron Maddox are two that I'm really looking forward to seeing how they look in a live-action game.
Agreed. I had both of them written down. I also think Mekhi Blackman's going to be an interesting one to watch. We've heard a ton of good stuff about him at camp, so hopefully it shows up on the field. I'll be interested to see how he does for sure.
Yeah, and then the defensive line. I think it's weird to say this, but I think obviously all we've heard from camp is coming from inside, really. But I think for the first time in a while, I'm somewhat comfortable with at least the starting five, probably the first six or seven guys on the offensive line. So I'm not too worried about them, at least. I'm really curious to see how the defensive line holds up. Again, they're going against a very inexperienced offensive line at Colorado State, but I want to see how they look against a team that they should just easily manhandle.
Yeah, I know we said in the past, like, I think we talked about it last week, actually, where, it seemed like the buffs on the line on both sides seemed really good last year after Colorado State. So I kind of think it's going to be a similar thing. I mean, I'm with you. I think that'll be something good to look at. I wrote down too, just like the offensive line play in general to see how they do. I'm not necessarily one particular player, but it is kind of going to be the same thing. I feel like with positions like that, as much as you want to say, oh, they're really good now after seeing one game, I think it'll take until we play someone a little bit more legit. Sorry, Rams, Lambs fans, but I don't feel like the Rams are that team this year. So, it'll probably take until Nebraska to really get a good feel for what they've got on both sides of the line.
I think if they, one thing I can't remember too well from last year, but I don't think even in the CSU game, our defensive line got too much pressure on the quarterback last year. Maybe I could be completely wrong, but I think, a pass rusher is a pass rusher. And so I think if we can see like guys like, Mustafa Johnson, Terrence Ling, Alex Changham, Carson Wells getting in the backfield consistently on passing downs, I think that kind of translates over. Obviously, you're not going to get as many opportunities against better talent, but I just think that if you can get in the backfield consistently against CSU, that's going to be good, good prognosis going forward.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'd say that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. I think we kind of obviously are very confident that CU can win this game, but I kind of just want to touch on what would need to happen for CU to lose this game. Like what kind of has to happen and what kind of needs to go wrong for CU to lose a game like this against a team where they just straight up have more talent.
I mean, aside from like the Rams driving down the field on their first drive, kicking a field goal and then a meteor hitting the field and the game being over. No, but in all seriousness, I think the only way that the Buffs lose is if A, the defense is much worse than we think it's going to be, and B, if Colin Hill really is the guy that it seems like the Rams are trying to pump him up to be. Like, if he just comes out and he has this unbelievable game, and I mean unbelievable because our offense is going to score points, so it would have to be something crazy. And they have a receiver that steps up, and our defense is just like a complete liability, which, again, I don't think is going to happen. But I feel like that's the only way. Along with, maybe our guys on offense struggle with the scheme at first. Maybe they have a slow start, first game, that kind of stuff. Getting in a vibe, maybe they could pull something out. But
yeah,
in all likelihood, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. And I think, for CU to win this game, it's kind of just pretty much plain and simple. Just, If you're not comfortable yet in the scheme, just, I think, fall back on your fundamentals and technique. I know I sound like a coach talking right there, but you're just going to be a better football team. So, just don't make dumb plays, don't make decisions that you wouldn't make in a bigger game, not necessarily a bigger game, but a game against a more talented team. I think you'll be completely fine. I think the talent deficit is just too big here, barring just like one of those classic, Appalachian State versus Michigan upsets. Obviously, I'm not saying we're as good as Michigan was,
right.
Talent-wise.
It's not as big of a gap as that, but it should be a pretty big gap. I mean, Buffs are favored by 13 now, I think.
Yeah, I took that line with a lot of money.
I mean, it was at like 9 or something when it first opened, and I think everyone is kind of like, okay, that's pretty ridiculous. So
yeah, I got it when it was at like 11.5 or something like that.
Right.
And I mean, I saw that, and that was easy money to me at least. So I think that, you know, that should be the expectation for this game, is that, you know, an 11.5 or 13 spread, excuse me, is going to be very, very easily covered by the CU team.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even if the offense does have some struggles, maybe with the new scheme or something, I mean, Laviska Shenault is going to be open, you know, KD is going to be open. Like, they're not, I don't care what scheme you're running. I know Steven Montez can throw the ball to wide open receivers down the field. So
yeah,
I don't think that'll end up being a problem in the long run. And yeah, I'm with you. I think a spread of 13 points is probably pretty low for this one.
Yeah, I mean, if last year's team was able to win by, I'm doing the quick math, you know, was it 33 points, 32 points? I mean, I don't know how it came back for 13 for this game. But, I mean, Vegas typically knows what they're talking about. I just think that in this game, I think because it's considered a rivalry, I think it technically gets, that rivalry treatment where they think it's going to always be closer than it is. But, you know, just for this game, I'm very confident in that 13 spread. But speaking of last year's score, what are you kind of thinking your prediction for this game is?
Man, the exact number is hard. I think if we were talking, you know, they don't put in backups, that kind of thing. But I think they should have like a 30-point win here. I mean, I think I wrote down 45-14, and
yeah.
I'm thinking like along the lines of they put up a bunch of points, and then they probably put in their second team and third team, and then maybe CSU gets a touchdown here and there, and maybe our offense slows way down, you know. But
yeah,
I'm expecting an absolute blowout, to be completely honest.
I'm right with you there. I think, especially just, you know, with the lack of experience coming back on CU side, I'm actually expecting it still about 30 points, but I'm thinking more like a 55-21 kind of game, maybe 28. But I think the thing I'm curious to see, barring, like we said, a meteor hitting the field, if CU is up big, I mean, how much run do you think two should get, especially, you know, Tyler Lytle or Blake Stenstrom at quarterback, whoever has got that job? I mean, how much run do you want them to get, considering it's still a new scheme? I mean, they're still new to all this. Usually I'd be like, you know, get these guys as much game reps as possible, but you've got Nebraska coming into town the next week. I want to make sure that these guys, from my perspective, are as comfortable in the scheme as possible heading into that game. So, I mean, what do you think they're – the best option is there?
I mean, personally, I feel like you should be able to get, and again, you know, it totally kind of depends on the score, but if they're up 30 and, you know, I think they should at least give the backups the fourth quarter, you know. I mean, I think they could get plenty of run. I understand the concern with like new scheme and all that stuff, but I feel like there's only so much that Montez and Visca and KD and the running backs and those guys, I think there's only so much that they're really going to gain from just stomping on a team that's already, you know, beaten down anyway. I feel like they could give them, again, it's all kind of dependent on the score, but I think they could give them as much as, or they could give them a quarter or more. You know, I personally think one of the things I hated the most about the last coaching staff, like we touched on earlier, is that they would get up on teams and then they would take their foot off the gas and then it would get closer, and I couldn't stand that. So I'd like them to be conscious of that, obviously, but if it is, like I said, if they are up, you know, 40-7 or something like that, put in the backups. I mean,
right,
why even bother, why worry?
And I think kind of like to touch on what you said, I mean, I think Tyler Lytle, I think he's a redshirt sophomore, he's a redshirt sophomore,
right.
I mean, he
Stenstrom's a redshirt freshman.
Right. I mean, Lytle has been here, you know, 3 years, obviously redshirt one, but he really didn't see actual game action where he was running the offense until Utah,
right?
and even then he didn't really run too much, and it was snowing. I mean, that was just not ideal conditions, but that just shouldn't be an issue at any point in the program where you have a guy coming in, if someone were to get hurt, as your second string quarterback, and he's had zero game reps that are actually meaningful.
Right. I mean, this is what these games are for, you know. Yeah. You want to get those guys in, and you want to give them as much of an opportunity as possible, because you just never, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I really want to see Lytle or Stenstrom, whoever it is that they've got coming in second. I really want to see them. I mean, you don't have to throw it deep every play. You know, you just got to let them run the offense.
Efficiently, I mean, run the offense.
Yeah, and I can't remember the coach that had this quote. I want to say it was Spurrier back when he was at South Carolina, but he was asked about running up the score, and he said, "It's their job to stop my offense. It's not my job to slow down my offense for them."
Right. Yeah.
It was something along those lines, and I think that's a perfect way to describe it. You don't have to throw bombs every play, but let them run the offense like you would in any other situation. So they, you know, if they do have to come in at a point in the season when somebody gets hurt, they aren't, you know, deer in the headlights trying to figure out what they're doing.
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, when they put those guys in the game, like, run the actual offense. You know, mm-hmm. don't just do, yeah, don't slow it down. I would hope that they get legitimate looks. Mm-hmm. You know, at what running the offense is really like. That would be ideal. But yeah, I mean, I guess a good way to describe it is first half, I'm thinking all starters, no matter what the score is.
Right.
You know, you want to make sure that thing is locked down. And then mm-hmm. I still think, yeah, you bring them in for the third quarter, depending on what the score is. But I feel like at that point, once it's really out of hand, it's like, you know, the game's pretty much over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm completely with you there. I think that most people, in their right mind would want the exact same thing, just
right.
Getting those guys some runs so they aren't brand new to a game feel when they actually get there.
Right.
But you know, as far as this game, we kind of touched on it at different points, but like, what are your like your three big things you really want to take away from this game? Since obviously, you know, like we said last year with the lines, we thought the line was going to be good until they just got pushed around on both sides in the Nebraska game. So, kind of like, what are your three things you want to take away from this game?
My three things, I would say consistency from the secondary. I mm-hmm. really want to see that. I want to make sure that, you know, they're not giving up huge plays or anything like that. So consistent O-line play would be great. I know, like we were talking about, it's kind of going to be hard to say, but having a positive start to the season can't hurt, you know?
Right.
And then the last thing was going to be, it would be good to see what this running back rotation is going to look like, mm-hmm. and see those guys make some big plays, you know, to get a good feel for that. So I want to see all three of those things. I know we've been talking a lot already about the receivers and how they could have a big game in Montez, but seeing that part of our offense and kind of getting a feel for how they're actually going to run it, I think is something else that I really want to see.
Yeah. My three were the exact same things that you said. I mean, I want to see the defensive backs, you know, playing guys up, because I know that Mel Tucker in his defense, he likes to play a lot of press coverage, which is a big change from last staff. And they did a lot of, like, you know, zone, and they're a lot of like off man coverage where they're back 7-8 yards, you know. So I want to see these guys them be physical at the line of scrimmage with these receivers. I want to see them, you know, get in their face and not just get burned because they're trying to run these press coverage type of defense. And when Nate Landman's leading the team with two picks last year, that's not a good sign.
That's not great.
So, I mean, I think the secondary just really needs to show that they can at least run the defense the way Mel Tucker wants to run it and Tyson Summers, and make sure that they can be, like you said, consistent, not giving up deep plays and not having broken coverages all over the place. The offensive line, I want to make sure, I want them to, like, I want them to open up holes. I want them to keep Steven. I would love it if Steven doesn't touch the ground, you know, in this game.
That would be a very good start to the year. That would be great.
Yeah. Because I think at this point in his career, he's just, like, so used to getting beaten up that I don't want it week one, him to come out and just get hit a million times and then kind of back to the one read and go kind of thing that we've seen for the past couple of years. So keeping him off the ground and getting, you know, opening up holes in the running game, pass protection is solid. And then, yeah, like you said, the running backs. I want somebody to shine. I don't want. I know they keep talking about running back by committee, but I don't think there's ever been a team that has been successful running five running backs in.
Yeah, I agree. You know, rotating. Agreed. I think they need to find someone there, and I hope they can do it quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you can. I think you can rotate two, maybe three guys. I mean, obviously Alabama can do something like three guys, and like what they did last year, but. I think, you know, Mel Tucker's used to having two guys, like at Georgia, where you got one guy who's a little bit of that shiftier, quicker back, and then one guy who's, you know, he's going to bowl you over. He's a big dude. I think that Jaron Mangum can be that big bowl you over kind of guy, and then either Fontenot, Deion Smith, or Jarek Broussard can be that shorter or smaller, shiftier guy. And I just want, I want to start to see somebody kind of separate themselves from the group so we can kind of get away from this five running back committee type thing that they're trying to talk up right now.
Right, right. I mean, you know, CU is definitely not the University of Alabama, so that will not work for us. But yeah, if they could, like you said, if they could narrow it down to two, maybe a third if they really feel more comfortable with one of them, like catching passes or something like that. But yeah, I agree. As the more you can narrow that down for me, the better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, I think overall, I think we're both, like a lot of CU fans, I think we're both fairly confident this game should go as we expect it to. It shouldn't be a close one. I mean, you know, really, I just want to see those kind of the three things that we both kind of had written down, and just see those things come to fruition, and hopefully it'll translate to week two against a much better but not top 25 talented team.
Yep, agreed. Agreed. I think the one that we're really worried about is Nebraska. You know, I'm not scared of Cam the Ram.
No, I don't think anyone is. Honestly, he's probably going to get sick and just like he did, what was it, 2 years ago? I think he got sick like the day before the game. I kind of felt bad.
That's harsh. I'm pretty sure he died.
Yeah, I
know. I'm pretty
I think
sure
he did,
he
actually.
Died. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, granted, Nebraska's the Corn Huskers, so they're not exactly a threatening mascot either. But yeah.
Formerly the Bug Eaters, actually.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Two games to start off with where I just can't stand the other team. But, you know, that's good. That's good. That's how you want it to be. You want to play your rivals, so.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be an exciting opening start to the season. I mean, I think the whole schedule lines up well. It's going to be tough, but it's going to be a fun schedule to watch. There's not going to be a game where you're like, oh, I don't want to watch this thing at all. I think even Air Force, I think they're a less talented team, but it's not very often you get to see an option offense come into town. So I think that'll be fun to watch. And it's, you know, it's technically an in-state rival, even though they haven't played in like 40 some years.
Right, yeah, technically three rivalry games, but this one should be an absolute ass kicking. So I'm excited for that.
Yep, I'm excited for it too. And you know, we're finally here. Football's back. I don't know. I think just because the hiring of a new head coach, this has felt like the longest, you know, 8.5 months off season that I can remember. Maybe back to when McIntyre was hired, it was probably a pretty long off season then. But I've just been waiting for this week to come, and we're finally here.
Yeah, agreed. I'm ready for the season to start. I'm ready to see Ralphie charge around that field. You know, let's do this.
Gives me the chills every time. I'll never get it. I mean, I've been going to games for 25 years, and I still don't think I'll ever actually get over how impressive it is to watch her run.
Hands down, best part of the Rocky Mountain Showdown. Ralphie running around the field, everyone going nuts, and then Cam being, like, walked on a leash on the other side.
Yeah, like none of the handlers have any issue at all holding him back. He's just kind of doing his thing.
Right, right.
Yeah. So real quick, before we get into our final thing, final segment, we wanted to kind of just touch on. I wrote down a couple games that I'm really excited to watch for week one. It's not a great slate. Most of these games are pretty lopsided in terms of the talent. But one thing I wanted to watch is, I wanted to see Utah and BYU. I want to see how dominant Utah looks. I don't think BYU is going to be a world beater or anything like that. But, I mean, it is a rivalry game, and I want to see how Utah looks, especially with their new offensive coordinator coming in. And I want to see just how talented they really are. I know the hype is – I think Lee Corso picked them to be in the college football playoff. So, I mean, they're really getting the run around with this hype. So – I want to see what they look like. And then the other game I really want to watch is Northwestern and Stanford. I want to see a Big Ten team that, I mean, they won their division last year going against a Pac-12 team that, like you and I both said, I don't think either of us think that they're as talented as a top 25 team is. So I kind of want to see how the Pac-12 starts to look against, you know, other P5 conferences. Obviously, Arizona did not get us off to a great start, losing to Group of Five Hawaii. But those are the two games that I'm really interested to see and kind of see how both those teams look.
Yeah, I had both those games written down for the exact same reasons that you just said. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I think I don't think that highly of Stanford. I was surprised when they were ranked in the top 25 at all. So it'll be interesting to see them go up against Northwestern. You know, I hope they win. I mean, I tend to obviously root for the Pac-12 against other conferences just for the sake of the Pac-12. And in that respect, I think the game to watch is going to be Oregon versus Auburn.
Right. I didn't mention that when I knew you had it on your list. So
I figured as much, but, I think that's probably the best game of the slate this next weekend. So
it definitely is,
number 11, Oregon versus number 16, Auburn. You know, I really, really hope Oregon can win that game and kind of just get a good start to the season here. Cause if the Pac-12 loses that one, you know, it's just not going to look good. It's just going to be another national media saying, oh, the Pac-12 is down. Oh, the Pac-12 is not good, all that stuff. And meanwhile, you know, the SEC, yes, they're very strong at the top, but they also play one less conference game than everyone else, and they schedule a cupcake in November every year. So, you know, it's kind of like, I really want Oregon to win that game. I think it'll help the conference as a whole. So that's my big one that I'm going to want to watch this weekend for sure, outside of, obviously, Colorado.
Yeah, right. And I think at least in top 25 matchups, the Pac-12 has a very real chance of going 0-3 to start this. And, yeah, well, excuse me, 1-2. Utah, I don't think Utah's going to lose.
Oh, no, I don't either.
But, I mean, I think that Northwestern-Stanford game is going to be a very tight game, and I think that Oregon-Auburn is going to be extremely tight as well. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be very upset and disappointed if it happened, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Pac-12 starts off 1-2, and then, like you said, the media is just back to going, oh, the Pac-12 is going to be terrible again this year. And if Utah does want any chance of making the playoff, obviously have to run through their schedule with either – one loss or being undefeated, but if they want to have any chance of getting to the playoff, they've got to have the media bias not pushing down the Pac-12 like it has been the past couple years.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so they just need to get that off to a good start. I mean, I know after Arizona lost to Hawaii already, that narrative is already out there. Like,
yeah.
Oh, the Pac-12 is down again. But people don't realize, like, all the national media thinks is like, oh, Khalil Tate, like, that's going to be one of the best teams in the Pac-12. And I think anyone who actually watches is thinking, okay, well, who cares? Arizona's probably going to be towards the bottom of the Pac-12 South anyway.
Arizona, I think, and I'm obviously not trying to toot our own horn, but I think we both kind of called the BS on Arizona being of a tie, because I think Arizona actually had a top 25 vote, just one, but I mean,
ASU, I think, did.
Was it? Okay, it might have been ASU.
I don't
ASU,
know if but... U of A did. But, yeah, I mean, there's just more talk about them because they have Tate, never mind the fact that he hasn't been that good since his original breakout. But,
yeah, you know, since that, like, 1 or 2 months in 2017 where he was just, like, putting up video game numbers.
Yeah, since he beat the hell out of the bus, pretty much. And then came back and then beat the hell out of him again.
Yep. But
other than playing us, you know.
Yeah, I think my least favorite thing about Arizona is they always obviously mention Khalil Tate, and then they always go back to Khalil Tate holds the record for most rushing yards in a single football game for a quarterback. And every time it just crushes me because I've heard it a million times at this point. I don't need to hear it again.
Yeah, flashback to him from running all over the bus.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically him and Phil Lindsay just going back and forth running down the field that game, and unfortunately, he got the better of it, but that's in the past. Honorable mention, I did want to give an honorable mention to Houston and Oklahoma. I want to see what Houston talented and Houston speed looks like under Dana Holgorsen, since he's the head coach there. And obviously, I want to see what Jalen Hurts looks like in a Lincoln Riley office. I think that's going to be an explosive game, and it's going to be fun. The line was 24.5 Oklahoma.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, until I see something to prove otherwise, I'm taking Houston to cover that because there's no way Oklahoma's defense has gotten that much better.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that'll be interesting. Houston is a tough one because I remember them absolutely destroying who was it from the Pac-12 last year?
What? I can't even remember. Was it UCLA?
Yeah, I think it might have been UCLA.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have the ability to put up points, or at least they have in the past. And with, yeah, like you said, with Holgorsen, I feel like there should be even more potential for that. But I don't know. That's a tough one for me to take. I feel like Oklahoma always has blowout potential. Mm-hmm. So
it was Arizona they won. 45-18. They beat Arizona.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Well, oh, look at that. Arizona popping.
Shocker.
They're going to be good, right?
Right.
Fucking dumbasses.
Yeah, it's yeah, so I mean those are really the memes I want to watch. I'm pumped that we're finally back at football season. It's good. I love that CU's playing on Friday. So, you know, I get to go to CU game, watch CU. Hopefully knock on wood stomp on Colorado State, and then, you know, get to watch all these other teams play tomorrow. Obviously not too many great games, but get to see some of the transfer quarterbacks in action. You've got Justin Fields playing Florida Atlantic, you know, Ohio State. You've got, I want to see how Nebraska looks against their cupcake. I want to see Washington with Jacob Eason. There's just a lot of games I want to watch, even though the talent and the game itself might not be that exciting.
Right, yeah. It's a good first weekend to try and get a feel for what everyone's got to start with.
Yeah. So, final, you know, our final segment, we're going to try and start doing this every week. Thought it'd be an interesting idea. I want to give a shout out to my sister Kelly for helping me come up with this idea. We wanted to do the funniest college football tweet of the week. I think when Kelly and I initially came up with this, we assumed it would mostly be Mike Leach just left and right, because the guy's Twitter is absolutely hilarious. But
coach of Washington State Cougars, yep. For those of you who may not know that, he is absolutely insane.
Yeah, I mean, his nickname is the Pirate, and it's just, if you just go back and watch some of his post-game interviews, I think reporters will intentionally ask him these leading questions just because he'll go on rants that last 5 minutes, and absolutely hilarious to watch.
Absolutely must-watch TV.
But Chase and I both did some research, and my favorite tweet that I found was Matt Brown from @MattSBN. He tweeted, "Nice of Miami and Florida to honor the 150th anniversary of college football by playing like Rutgers all quarter," which just kind of really encapsulates how bad that game looked. So that was my tweet of the week, and I think Chase had a couple, or maybe an honorable mention he wanted to share as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one that I found that wasn't intentional is from Joel Klatt, our boy CU alum. He said he put out his own personal top 25, which is just as useless and unimportant as the actual AP preseason top 25, but still fun to talk about because everyone gets mad about him.
Right.
And his had Nebraska as the number 14 team in the country, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. Whew. So
4-8 to number 14.
Yep, taking a big shot there. What did we talk about? Yeah, all the records of all the other teams were fairly decent last year, and there's that 4-8 sitting in the top 15 teams in the country. So
yeah,
and good job there, Joel. I, like I said, you know, see you guy. So
yeah,
I don't know how he could possibly do that. I don't know how he could put pen to paper or fingers to keys and put that one out there, but he did.
Yeah, somehow he did it. And I think the funny thing about that, on top of kind of, you know, it's unintentionally funny, is I'm pretty sure Joel Klatt is one of the biggest proponents of removing the AP poll and the preseason polls. So right, for him to put out a tweet of his own top 25 is just kind of comedic to me. But
I mean, hey, maybe he did it sarcastically. I don't know.
Maybe I wouldn't be surprised.
Supposed to be funny, because that pick is absolutely out of this world ridiculous.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I feel like, especially me, because I grew up in Nebraska, I've hated that team for as long as I can remember. I think I like to harp on them a lot, but I think the reason they're getting so much run is because everyone says, oh, well, they were a completely different team. You know, the last half of the season went 4-2. Their 4-2 record, they beat Bethune-Cookman, real world beater there.
Bethune,
you know, they lost.
Cookman?
Yeah,
Bethune-Cookman. That's not real. That doesn't sound like a real team name.
Yeah, I know. They beat them. That was their, I think they rescheduled them in place of Akron when they had to cancel that game. Then they lost to Ohio State. Granted, it was a nail biter. I think that Ohio State was probably just not really focused for that game because they saw a 1-5 team coming into play. They beat Illinois. Again, nothing special. They beat Michigan State without scoring a touchdown. Okay, they did not score a touchdown and beat Michigan State.
That is the definition of a fluke. What was the score of that game?
9-6.
96. Okay. Yeah. That is an absolute fluke.
Yeah.
You don't say that that was like, I mean, yeah, that's not how they win games. This is a defense that is absolutely atrocious. I would feel better about that win if they put up 45 points and eked it out that way.
But, yeah. I mean, they couldn't even score a touchdown. So, and then, you know, they played Iowa close to finish the season. So, I mean, I guess some real moral victories there coming close to beating Ohio State and Iowa, but I just really don't get where this hype is coming from.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, well, so I think that's going to do it for this week's segment. We'll be back next week talking about the results of the Rocky Mountain Showdown and then kind of going over what we think for week two, big one at Nebraska, or not Nebraska, against Nebraska in Boulder. Obviously, I'll have a lot of negative things to say about them, but in all honesty, I do respect that the talent on that team is they're good. I just don't think they're as good as everyone's putting them up to be.
Yeah, well, we will talk about it next week after the beatdown that the Buffs hopefully put on the Rams here coming up.
Rocky Mountain beatdown coming up on this Friday.
All right. Well, thank you, and let's go Buffs.
Let's go Buffs.